Hello, and welcome back to We Are the Weirdos, Mister, the podcast for all things cult, camp, queer, and creepy. I am your host, Hillary Michelle Post, and I am joined today by my dear Julie. How are you doing today, Julie?
I am today. I'm good. I didn't work today, so I'm in fine form.
Nice. We're recording this on a Thursday, and I am off work tomorrow for Good Friday, which is awesome. I don't get paid, though.
I have to work.
Aw, lame. At the theater?
At the movie theater. Tomorrow's Dumbledore.
Ain't nobody gonna go.
Well, we're also not normally open that early on Fridays. Like, our theater, like, we go by the school district that the theater's in for, like, our days and, like, our school hours. So our school hours are 3:45 to 7:45. So Friday we'll be open at 11. So, like, we're never open at 11 except for on the weekend. So I don't think we'll be very busy.
Well, I hope not. Is it better or worse when it's busy?
Okay, so when we just came back after COVID, it sucked to just sit there and do nothing. But now I get mad when people come in. So I don't want it to be super busy because I'm training a new guy and he hadn't even worked cash yet. So, like, I kind of don't want it to be busy because I'm training the new guy. But that's the only thing about being busy that sucks right now is that we're just not busy very often. So when we do get slammed, we're not staffed nearly enough to be that busy.
Yeah. So what did you do on your day off?
School stuff? I slept in, which was awesome. Nice. And then I finally got my mom to go to Walmart. Like, we needed to go to the grocery store so bad. I should have went on Tuesday, but I didn't. So we went to the grocery store. We spent $221 at Walmart. And I usually do the grocery shopping, and I'm actually pretty good at, like, not spending a crap ton of money. But anytime I go with my mom, I turn into a little kid, and I'm like, but we need this. I conned her into buying, like, a giant mixed bag of Krabby Patties. Did we need it? No. Did I want it? Yes. So I was like, I'll pay for it. And then I was like, I didn't pay for it. I was like, you don't have to pay for it, right? And, like, she was like, yeah, I know.
Actually made, like, crab patties or, like, SpongeBob branded Krabby Patties?
SpongeBob branded Krabby Patties. The Krabby Patties, they're gummies. They're Krabby Patties. And it was cheaper. It was cheaper than the bag of, like, Hershey's chocolate that she bought. She was like, oh, we need to get some Easter candy, right? I was like, yes. Yes, we do. Absolutely, we do. We were walking out the door, ready to go to the cash register. I saw a pair of denim shorts. I was like, I need these. She said, okay, what size did you get? I was like, 22. She's like, they don't fit you. They'll fit me. Okay. They do fit, by the way.
Nice.
And I'm not in love with them, but I think I'm going to make it work.
See, that's why, well, that's not why, but one of the advantages of ordering and for pickup that we do, there's no, like, impulse shopping. Like, we order what we need and we get the same stuff every week. Okay. And it's just
okay. Yes. However, you know how some people talk about Target and they're like, Target will tell me what I need when I get there?
Mm-hmm.
That's Walmart for me. Walmart will tell me what I need when I get there. Like, they'll let me know. Yeah.
So we're here to talk about a movie.
Oh my god, is that true? I thought we were just having a conversation.
We're gonna talk about a movie.
Okay.
We're going to continue our conversation. It's just going to be about a movie.
I have something to say about this. You introduce the movie and then we'll talk about it.
Okay. So today we are going to be discussing a movie that was very formative for me and had a huge influence on my love of horror. It is one of my favorite films and I've been wanting to do it for the pod for a while. And with the recent sad news of Bruce Willis's retirement, I figured it was finally time. Today, we're talking about The Sixth Sense. So, Julie, what are your thoughts?
I've never seen this movie. I had never seen it. Honestly, I swear to God, this was like when I watched it last week, it was the first time I've ever watched this movie. I turned it on. My mom goes, "Oh, The Sixth Sense. I like this movie. I've seen this." And then she proceeds to recall the plot of the film that I have never seen.
Thanks, Mom.
I was like,
huh. You already knew, but I mean, you knew.
I knew. Yeah, I knew the twist. Well, that's the thing. Like, my first thought as the credits roll, right? No idea Toni Collette was in that movie. Not a clue. Had no idea. I didn't know. Yeah. Okay. So that was the thing. And then my second thought was there was no way you didn't know the plot to this movie immediately.
She texted me and said that to me. And my rebuttal to that was I was 11.
Even so, if you were barely a teen, you had to know. I knew you knew. You weren't surprised. Were you?
I was completely surprised. Yes, I was. Because I was a child.
Wait, do you think that's why you are so good at sussing movies out now, though? Because you saw that and you were tricked once and you were like, never again?
I was furious. I was furious that I didn't get it. I was so mad. And not at the movie. Because that's the thing about twists. You have to have a good twist. The twist has to make sense. You can't just, like, pull it out of your ass at the last minute. And this was a good twist because it was so obvious. And the fact that I didn't see it pissed me off. And so now my film literacy is like this movie. That's why I say this movie is very formative to me. It really got me into like screenwriting and film language and horror in general. It's not really a horror movie, but like when you're a baby and you know what I mean? It's like a baby horror film.
What a twist.
I saw it in Zanesville, like with my mom. And then when it came to McConnellsville, I like took everybody. I was like, oh my God, you guys got to go see this movie. And I remember my best friend at the time, like hiding in her hoodie. She like put her hood up and squished it all the way closed because she was so scared. I'm like, you had to watch the movie. She's like, no, I can't. I'm in my happy space. But yeah, that was another reason why I wanted to do it for the pod, because Julie had never seen it and I wanted her to see it. Even if you know, go in knowing the twist, which everyone does
it's
now.
It's so good.
It's like, so good.
It was so good. I really enjoyed it. Like, I was really happy that I mean, not happy that I watched it, but happy that I watched it. It was good.
Yeah. I'm glad you liked it. If you would have been like, that sucked, I would have been heartbroken.
No. Also, I fully did not know this was an M. Night Shyamalan film.
Damn, Jules.
Yeah, I nothing. Not a thing. Did not know. And I was like, I was Googling it. I was on IMDb and it was like M. Night Shyamalan. I was like, oh, he's going to show up. I was like, where is he? Literally 2 seconds later, I heard his voice and I was like, there he is. Yeah, fully did not know. Like, I was like, oh, Toni Collette's in this movie? I was like, did not know that. I'm like, okay.
I love Toni Collette so much.
I do too.
So, a little background on the film first. So, despite being the third film written and directed by M. Night Shyamalan, this was his first big hit. And it really outlined the rest of his career in terms of the type of cinematic language that he would use. The other two movies, I don't even remember what they were called. They're like nothing. You've never even heard of them. David Vogel, the then president of production of Walt Disney Studios, read Shyamalan's spec script and loved it. And without obtaining corporate approval, Vogel bought the rights despite the price of $3 million and the stipulation that Shyamalan could direct the film. Disney dismissed Vogel from his position at the studio. Whether that was because of this or not, I'm unclear. But Vogel left the company shortly thereafter. Disney sold the production rights to Spyglass Entertainment while retaining the distribution rights and 12.5% of the film's box office takings. So it's still technically a Disney movie too, but they were like, God damn it, Vogel. And they
that feels kind of shiesty.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's actually a not okay thing to say. Oops. it's fine. Shady. Let's should go with that. That's a little shady.
Yeah. So the film stars Bruce Willis as Dr. Malcolm Crowe. And apparently, from what I gather from my research, the year prior to this production, Bruce Willis was set to star and produce a romantic comedy to be distributed by Disney called Broadway Brawler. And that film crashed and burned. Willis like fired the director. Everything tanked. It just completely imploded.
Wow.
And so Willis appeared in this film as part of a deal to compensate Disney because he owed Disney money for Broadway Brawler. That being said, M. Night Shyamalan wrote the role with Willis in mind, so it worked out really well. I just find it funny that this was like a contractual obligation for Bruce, but it turned out to be one of the most iconic films he ever starred in.
Yeah, no joke.
Like, because when you think Bruce Willis, it's like Die Hard, Moonlighting, maybe Sixth Sense. Like, it's just, it's in the forefront of your mind.
I would definitely go Die Hard, Sixth Sense first.
Well,
like
yeah.
Before the other, whatever, the other thing that you said that I've never seen.
Moonlighting, it was the TV show he was in before he became super famous.
Yeah.
Yeah. So playing opposite Willis is a young Haley Joel Osment as Cole Sear. And Shyamalan was hesitant to cast Osment originally because he was so cherubic and he kind of pictured Cole as dark and broody.
No way, this is so much better.
Yeah, totally. I think it's effective that Haley is so angelic looking. It makes it a more interesting juxtaposition. It makes you feel bad for worse for him. Michael Cera auditioned for the role of Cole. And it was Sarah's first professional audition as a kid. How weird would that have been?
It would have been really weird.
Yeah.
Although, because I'm like, I was super into Disney kids, like, Emily looks, they look, because they're siblings, they look copy-pasted. Like,
they do.
They copy-pasted.
They do look so much alike. She keeps popping up in things that my parents watch. Like, she was in The Righteous Gemstones. Joe Jonas showed up in The Righteous Gemstones, too. That was funny. Mom screamed at me from the other room, "Get in here!" I was like, "What?" And she's like, "Joe Jonas is on Righteous Gemstones." And she's on, Emily is also on Young Sheldon right now. She just keeps popping up.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool. Good for her.
She looks bomb. She looks great.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Haley showed up in What We Do in the Shadows, and that was awesome.
Oh, yeah. I love him. So filming for Sixth Sense took place in Philadelphia, where Shyamalan is from, and features a lot of iconic Philly buildings and locales like St. Augustine's Church. The film was also filmed in sequence, which doesn't happen very often. I find that interesting.
In order?
Yeah. Like in script order. Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, let's dive into the plot. I mean, everyone knows the twist, but I'm going to go through the movie as if we don't.
Yeah, because, my notes are kind of like that, too.
It's written so well that you can tell the story with... I know you said watching it, you could tell, but, like...
You can, but that's because I knew.
Yeah, I think that might have something to do with it.
Yeah.
If you didn't know, you might have been able to suss it out just because we watch so many movies, but it's still well done, I think.
Yeah, it is, but I'm just saying, it was super obvious to me. We'll just go ahead and then we'll talk about it.
Okay.
I'm trying to get ahead of myself.
So, Malcolm and his wife, Anna, played by, I think her name's Anna, played by Olivia Williams, return home from an award ceremony where Malcolm was honored for his work as a child psychologist. After they drink a little bit more wine and kiss on the couch and are all being all cute, they go upstairs to discover that a man has broken into their home. He has taken off his clothing and is standing in his underwear in their bathroom that's adjacent to their bedroom. Did you recognize him?
Or I
did
didn't.
You see his name?
I know who it is, but I didn't recognize him. But I know now.
I love Donnie Wahlberg. I love him so much. I've loved him since I was like 4. He was my favorite new kid. He is so good in this small part. Like, he's so good. He lost 43 pounds for the role. And it's a very short role, but it's very effective. It's very chilling.
Was this one of his first forays into acting?
Yeah.
When was this movie filmed? 97?
Yeah, I think so. So that was what, like 3 or 4 years before Band of Brothers? Yeah.
God, I love Band of Brothers. I think I need to rewatch.
I know. I'm trying to get my sister to watch it. And like, we watched the first couple episodes, but.
You got to get through this first couple. Like, you got to get through like this first. Yeah. The first episode was rough. The second episode is actually a perfect episode of television. And then, like, 3 is a little slow. 4 is when you start to get into it. And then 5, boom. Or, oh, it's my favorite. Crossroads. It's the Tom Hanks directed episode for your listeners.
Where was I? Okay, so Donnie Wahlberg.
Donnie Wahlberg. Donnie Wahlberg broke into Bruce Willis's apartment.
And Malcolm recognizes him as a former patient, Vincent Gray, who he treated 10 years prior. And basically, he failed to treat Vincent properly. And it has haunted Vincent his whole life. He never got better, quote unquote, got better. And he says, "Do you know why you're afraid when you're alone? I do." And he's crying. And, you know, all rapid fire, you know, Malcolm is remembering everything and remembering that he like diagnosed how he diagnosed him. And he still can't make it better. And then Vincent shoots Malcolm in the abdomen and then shoots himself in the head. The following fall, Malcolm meets his new patient, Cole. Cole is 9 years old, and he reminds Malcolm of Vincent, even down to the little blonde spot in his hair. Did you notice that?
Mm-mm.
Vincent had, like, a little white streak in his hair behind his ear, and Cole has the same thing. Yeah. Cole lives with his single mother. He has acute anxiety and is socially isolated. And has a possible mood disorder, all just like Vincent Gray did. So Malcolm follows Cole into St. Augustine's Church, where he is playing with toy soldiers and speaking Latin to himself. He wears his dad's old glasses with the lenses popped out. As Malcolm talks to him and tries to get to know him, he notices that Malcolm has scratches on, or Malcolm notices that Cole has scratches on his wrist. And honestly, they look like self-harm, just like where they're located.
Yeah.
If I saw them, I would think they were self-inflicted. But they talk and Cole's just kind of like, whatever about him. You know, he doesn't seem super interested in talking to Malcolm, but he doesn't completely blow him off either. He's like intrigued.
Okay. Yeah. Well, he like the kid's like absolutely like resigned to it. Like he's like, yeah, sure, whatever. You know what I mean? Which, if you know the twist, is a tell.
Yeah, but you can also interpret it as he's had a bunch of doctors before. Or you know what I mean? There's so many different ways you can interpret it. And I love that Cole steals a Jesus statue on his way out the door.
Yeah.
Just like, yoink. Malcolm comes home that evening. His wife has already eaten dinner and is asleep in bed. So Malcolm goes down to their basement, where he kind of has like a little office set up. And he looks up the Latin phrase he heard Cole say. And it translates to, "Out of the depths I cry to you, O Lord." Which is a eerie thing to hear a child say.
I think that the him coming home to like the dinner being done and her being asleep, like that whole thing just hurts my feelings. Like it's sad.
Yeah. It's a bummer.
Yeah.
We see Cole and his mom, Lynn, played by Toni Collette, getting ready in the morning. They have a cute little husky puppy that I totally forgot about until this most recent watch. I'm like, oh, yeah, they have a puppy. A little bit about Toni Collette in this film. Oh my God, she's so great. Toni Collette has said that she was so moved by the emotional resonance of the story while filming. She didn't realize it was a horror film until after its release. And she's kind of like, oh yeah. She's so cute. I love her. She's kind of like a full-blown scream queen at this point.
Yeah.
This Hereditary, Krampus, like, hell yeah. Oh, I love her. So Lynn is up getting dressed, going in back and forth from the kitchen to the laundry room and stuff. And Cole is sitting at the table with his cereal. And Lynn briefly leaves the room to get him a clean tie. And when she comes back, all of the cabinet doors are open. And she's gone in like a matter of seconds. And it's very unsettling.
Yeah.
And she just assumes that Cole did it. And she, and Cole says it was him. But he's visibly shaken. And he said that he was looking for Pop-Tarts. But he goes to leave for school, and Lynn sees that he's left sweaty handprints on the table. So he was definitely shaken up.
Mm-hmm.
So Lynn watches Cole walk away with Tommy.
Tommy Tamasimo, that little brat.
He's the worst. He's the worst. As soon as they're out of Lynn's eye line, Tommy like blows Cole off and calls him a freak. Cole attends a Catholic school called St. Anthony's. I don't wonder if that's a real school or if they just doctored one up to look like it. I don't know. Didn't look it up. I need to Google what else that the kid that played Tommy was in, because he looks really familiar, but I can't
place. He is very familiar. Hold on. I will vamp for me. I'll get it for you.
I feel like I want to say like a DCOM, like a Disney Channel original movie.
Yeah.
That's the vibe I'm getting. I don't know.
Hold on. You have to spell out the word sixth.
Hold on. I got it. Trevor Morgan.
Damn you.
Trevor Morgan.
Can't believe you would do this to me.
Wow, he looks different. No shit, Hillary. It's been over 20 years. Oh, he was in The Patriot.
Let me scroll on down, see what my guy's been in. Touched by an Angel.
Jurassic Park 3.
CSI Miami. He was in something that we watched several times. I know it. He has to be. Yeah. He can't just be a that guy.
What the fuck?
Oh,
I mean, now I definitely remember him from The Patriot, because I remember there was like a bunch of fucking kids in that movie, but I don't know.
Weird. Guess he really is just a that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's in Barney's Great Adventure. That's where we know him from. Probably, actually.
Maybe.
Anyway, I just recognize that face a lot. He sucks.
He does suck. So after school, Cole gets home, finding Malcolm sitting in his living room with Lynn. Lynn gets up and greets Cole, and they share fantasies of a great day, which is so depressing.
Oh, yeah.
Lynn's like, I won lottery and I quit my jobs and I did this, this, this. And Cole says he was picked first at recess and he kicked the winning ball and kickball or whatever. And they lifted him up on his shoulders and carried him around. It's just so such a bummer. Like, I get why they do it, but at the same time, it's like kind of dark. You know what I mean? For mom to be like, hey, let's fantasize that our lives don't suck. Look, can you pretend that your lives don't suck, maybe? Lynn goes to make dinner, leaving Cole alone with Malcolm. And Malcolm tries to get Cole to sit and talk to him, but Cole silently declines. So they play a mind reading game. where Malcolm is like, I'll read your mind, and if I'm right, you take a step towards the chair, and if I'm wrong, you take a step back, and if you make it to the chair, you have to sit down and talk to me. So, first few guesses are right. He's like, you know, your mom went to see a therapist like me, but it didn't help her, so now you don't trust me. Stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And so he makes it like halfway to the chair, and then he notices this old watch, and he guesses that his dad left it for him, and he's like, no, it's broken. He just left it in a drawer. And then he guesses that Cole's never been in any serious trouble in school. And Cole explains that that's not true either, that he got in big trouble because he drew a picture of a man with a screwdriver in his neck, stabbed into his neck.
This poor kid.
I know, right? And everyone got really upset about it. And he says, I don't draw pictures like that anymore. He draws pictures of rainbows and dogs and happy stuff. Cole, poor Cole.
Like, yeah. My feelings were hurt about that, I'll be honest.
Yeah. And he even asks, he's like, is that something you saw on TV? And he's like, no. And you're just like, oh, God.
Well, yeah, he's a baby ghost whisperer. He doesn't need Bruce Willis. He needs Jennifer Love Hewitt.
He needs a young priest and an old priest.
Exactly. Poor kid.
Yeah. But he just tells Malcolm that, you know, you can't help me. And he just leaves, walks out the room.
Just, like, doesn't that just make it so much sadder? Like, mm-hmm. when you know the twist, like, it's so depressing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, poor kid.
Malcolm, speaking of the twist, like, part of me wishes that the marketing of this movie didn't include the I see dead people line, because everyone going into the movie knew that much. That doesn't happen until so far into the movie that if they had just marketed this as like a psychological thriller and you just thought it was like about this psychologist helping this messed up kid, holy shit.
Yeah.
It would have been like, you know what I mean? Twice as impactful. Whatever. That just stuck out at me when I was watching it again for the first time after a long time. I was just like, man, we don't even get to the reveal of that for so long into the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so Malcolm arrives at a restaurant to find his wife Anna sitting alone, and he apologizes for being late and tells her how much Cole reminds him of Vincent and that he expects that there might be abuse.
Which, my man's cannot be talking about this with his wife. Like, is that not illegal?
It's totally legal.
Okay. I was like, I mean, like, obviously, like, with the twist, we know that, like, she's not really knowing anything. But also, he can't just talk about that with his wife.
Yeah. Maybe the laws are different when it's a minor. I don't know. I don't know.
It can't be different. It would be doubly wrong to do it about a kid.
Well, I mean, I guess you could say as much as, like, I suspect abuse, because you would have to tell somebody that anyway, as being, like, a mandated reporter. I don't know.
Yeah.
But she doesn't respond to him, and except for wishing him a happy anniversary before leaving without him. The next day, Malcolm and Cole walk down the street together talking. Cole admits he doesn't tell his mom things, because he doesn't want her to look at him the way other people do. Like, he's a freak. Oh, so sad. Malcolm tells him he's not a freak and not to believe people when they call him that, because it's bullshit. And Cole points out Malcolm cursed, to which Malcolm apologizes. I thought that part was cute. He's like, you said the S word. He's like, yeah, sorry. We see Lynn at home doing laundry, listening to music with a Walkman. Holy old school Batman. While looking at pictures of Cole on the wall, she notices that in every picture, there's a lens flare. It's something like a little tiny shining in the background of every picture.
And that's what you get for letting J.J. Abrams take your family photos.
Heyo. But like, wouldn't you find, maybe it's just because I'm so superstitious and believe in all that who's he, what's it, but like, if I noticed that, I'd be like, that is fucking weird. It would like, it would stick in my crawl.
Yeah, I did. I thought of The Shining too when I saw it. I was like, how long have you had the shine?
Yeah.
I thought of it.
Totally.
Like, oh my god, yeah, that would be so scary.
Yeah. During Malcolm and Cole's next session, Malcolm mentions free association writing. And we see a continuation of the previous scene of Lynn cleaning and finding pages of angry writing on Cole's desk. And Cole admits to Malcolm that he has free associated before and has written, quote, upset words. Malcolm asks if he ever wrote upset words before his dad left, but Cole says he doesn't remember. And as he goes to leave, Malcolm asks Cole to set a goal for what he wants out of their time together. And Cole says he doesn't want to be afraid anymore. Cole.
Aww.
So Malcolm is back in the basement working at home on Cole's case when he hears a male colleague of Anna's from Anna's work stop by and invite her to come to Amish country with him. And she politely declines, and Malcolm watches the man through the basement window. And the guy, like, waffles about whether or not he should leave. And when he finally does, Malcolm's like, yeah, keep moving, cheese dick.
Oh.
Cole in history class. That's the next scene. So, Cole is in history class. And the teacher asks if anyone knows what their school building was used for before it was a school. And Cole raises his hand and says they used to hang people here. And the teacher argues with him. Which, by the way, is so... Like, I get that he's trying to defuse the situation and not have the kids be creeped out. But, like, he's not wrong.
Yeah.
If it's a courthouse, he's still right.
Yeah.
You know, he could have been like, yes, but, you know, other things happen here. You know, but that teacher's a fucking dick. And he, like.
He really is.
Yeah. He, like, makes fun of, basically, like, mocks Cole for saying that, like, an older kid must have told him that or something, like, he's dumb. He's like, no, it was a courthouse, blah, blah. And Cole's like, yeah, that's where all the people, they were the people that hung everybody.
Yeah.
So the teacher is like giving him like a smarmy look. And Cole's like, I don't look at me like that. You shouldn't look at people like that. It hurts their feelings. And he's like, well, look at you. Like, how am I supposed to look at you? And Cole says, when you were young, they used to call you Stuttering Stanley. You used to talk weird.
Mm.
And the teacher's like, what, how do you know that? Blah, blah, blah. And so he just starts screaming at him, Stuttering Stanley, Stuttering Stanley, Stuttering Stanley. And the teacher screams at him, shut up, you freak.
Why? Ma'am, sir, like, what? I can't, like. Okay, first things first, if a kid starts doing that, like, you gotta be like, hey, like, let's, like, we're either gonna calm down or I'm gonna send you to the office. Like, obviously you're not supposed to send kids out of the room because they're supposed to stay in their room so they can learn, but at the same time, like, oh my god, and I absolutely do not know what I would do if, how would you deal with ghosts airing out your laundry to a 9-year-old?
Right.
Like, what? Like, I can't. Yeah. I can't. Like, if a kid started screaming at me, like, I would just be like, please go to the office because I literally can't handle you right now. Like, yeah. I just, like, I can't.
Like, how do you make it all the way to becoming a teacher and have such poor, like,
classroom management skills?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Like, first of all, you can't call a kid a freak. Like, and also, like, you know he's right, so, like, why don't you just be like, okay, maybe that did happen here, but let's keep moving on. That's all you have to do. Like, that kid would never, he would have never said another word.
Yep. But he had to be a dick and stand there and make a shitty face at him, and,
I did, my note says that's what the teacher gets for trying to be on the side of the government.
You're not wrong.
I'm not wrong.
So Cole clearly gets in trouble for this little outburst. We see him sitting alone in the office, or an office. Mm-hmm. And Malcolm comes to Cole's school and sits down across from him and tries to cheer him up by doing a really dumb magic trick. That's supposed to be dumb, like it's a joke. And Cole says that Malcolm is funny. He's like, I didn't know you were funny. Which is, well, we'll get to that. I don't want to get into the twist stuff, but, like, that must be so refreshing for him on so many levels.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Malcolm comes home to his and Anna's wedding video playing on the TV. He goes upstairs where Anna is showering, and he finds a bottle of Zoloft in the medicine cabinet. And it's, like, framed in such a weird, I guess, because it would only be upsetting that she didn't discuss it with him, I guess, is why it's upsetting to him. But in general, it's just like, you're a psychiatrist. Like, people take medicine. It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
But the way that it's common in movies for people to be like, mental illness is bad. Dun, dun, dun. Zoloft. Holy shit.
Yeah.
And my Shyamalan has issues with ableism and shit like that. So, Cole and Lynn are at a kid's birthday party, and Cole tries to do the silly magic trick that Malcolm did for a classmate, but the classmate calls it stupid because he's a little shithead. Then Cole overhears his mom thanking the mom hosting the party for inviting Cole because he doesn't get invited to many things. Which, thanks, Lynn. Like, maybe we don't talk about our kids' social problems, but whatever. Cole follows a balloon up the stairwell where he hears a man's voice come from a crawl space. And Tommy, the little dickhead from earlier, and this kid, Derek, follow Cole upstairs and shove him into the crawl space. And the door gets stuck. And so upsetting. Cole screams from inside the crawl space, crying and screaming for help and banging on the door. Excuse me. And Lynn just frantically tries to get him out, but can't. And then the door finally opens, and an unconscious Cole collapses into Lynn's arms. But I tell you, fucking crawl spaces, man. My dad, at my dad's old house, there was a crawl space just like that on a stairwell.
No.
Woo! I was afraid of that crawl space, man. Tell you what. Ugh. This is the same house that Dad and I went to see another M. Night Shyamalan movie, Signs. And then I had to go back to Dad's house and sleep on the couch underneath a window that looked out into, I'm talking like 5 feet away. It's just a huge cornfield.
That's hilarious. Did you know that Signs is my most quoted M. Night Shyamalan movie? Have we had this conversation before?
No. What line do you quote?
It's contaminated.
It's my most quoted.
Yeah, like when she tastes the water and she's like, it's contaminated, and then sets it down. Here's the thing. I do it the most when my mom makes Rice Krispie treats, because she makes them half and half. So she'll make regular ones and then she'll put chocolate bits in the other half and make them like chocolate. And I don't like that. I don't like those at all. And so wherever they're touching, I just look at them and I go, it's contaminated. It makes her really mad, but honestly, all the time, anything is contaminated. She hates it. She's like, you guys want it? And like, that, she literally made them yesterday. It 3/4 of the pan is the chocolate ones. I was like, why would you do that? I was like, Matt and I like the plain ones. It should be the other way around. And she was like, I'll have all these done before you even eat that. And I was like, I won't even use the same knife. Like, if it's got chocolate on it, I don't want it to touch my Rice Krispie treats. It's contaminated. Anyways, sorry. That was a little offshoot, but I've been thinking about it the whole time because M. Night Shyamalan.
Go ahead.
But also in that scene, like, I'm trying to bring it back to the movie.
Well, before we do.
Okay, go for it.
Signs is my most quoted movie, but M. Night Shyamalan movie too.
Mm-hmm.
But I always say, move children, vomitos. That's a good movie.
It is.
Anyway, go ahead about this scene.
Okay, so like the thing that was super upsetting to me about this scene is it takes a while for Lynn to get there because he is in that crawl space screaming and then the music downstairs is so loud.
Yeah.
Like they can't hear him. And the kid, those boys are just sitting there laughing and they have no idea what's happening.
Yeah.
Like it's so distressing.
Yeah.
Oh. Like, ugh.
Lynn takes Cole to the hospital. And M. Night Shyamalan makes a cameo as a doctor. He always makes cameos in his movies.
Literally, I was literally looking at IMDb because I was trying to figure out who Tommy Tamasima was. And then I saw that it was M. Night Shyamalan and I was like, oh, I was like, where's he at? I was like, he's going to show up soon. Literally 2 seconds later, I heard his voice and I was like, there he is.
There he is. Malcolm is with Lynn as well. And then the doctor says that he's concerned about the cuts and bruises on Cole's body. And Lynn's like, he gets those from sports. And the doctor doesn't look impressed.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants Lynn to talk to a social worker because they suspect abuse. And she's like, are you accusing me of abusing my child? And she's really upset because she doesn't understand what happened that day. She's like, something happened to my son today. Something bad happened. What happened? And like, no one can answer her. So while Lynn deals with the social worker, presumably, Malcolm goes in to Cole's hospital room. And he's laying in the bed, looking miserable. And he like, tries to tell Cole a bedtime story. But it's really stupid and rambly and doesn't really go anywhere. About a prince on a drive. And he's just like, you've never told a bedtime story before, have you? And he's like, no. He's like, so he says to Malcolm, he says, tell me the story of why you're sad. And he's like, how do you know I'm sad? He's like, your eyes told me.
Oh.
And eventually Malcolm admits to being sad about Vincent, about failing Vincent, and how he wants to help Cole because he thinks it'll bring him closure for Vincent too, which is good of him. Probably not the wisest thing to have admitted that, like professional wise. But I like that he admitted that.
Yeah.
So since Malcolm opened up to Cole agrees to open up to Malcolm and tells Malcolm his secret, which is he can see dead people.
Oh, he knocked this shit out of the park. Like, out of the park. Like, for him to be so young and just, like, oh my god. Could you imagine if Michael Cera said that?
No.
Like, no!
But he's so good. He's like,
he's absolutely incredible.
There's so much going on in it. There's like, he's scared and earnest, and he's like scared because he's admitting something big, and he's scared because of the situation, and he's scared just like, and even Bruce Willis's performance is really good too and understated, because he's, because now Bruce Willis is scared for a whole different reason. Quit playing on Facebook.
It was a really cute post. Leave me be. I'm also protecting Heather.
Anyway.
I am participating. I'm listening to you. I'm fully engaged.
Good. So now, unfortunately, Malcolm thinks that Cole is, like, seriously ill. That he thinks he's completely cuckoo bananas. Sorry, I'm distracted by my cat.
Oh, but I can't play on Facebook.
It's not my fault that Dottie's all up in my grill. I'm trying to get her to go away, but she won't. She's just, like, right next to my head, just purring as loud as she can.
That's pretty cute, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, this whole scene, I mean, yeah, because he thinks this kid is, like, severely ill, and it's like, oh, buddy.
Mm. Lynn carries a sleeping Cole into the house and puts him to bed. And as she undresses him, she sees a hole in his sweater and sees the severe scratches and bruises all over his body. So she calls Cole's classmate's mom. And is like, keep your kid's goddamn hands off of my kid.
Oh, there, you know, there's one thing we haven't talked about Tommy, and that he was in, like, a shitty cough syrup commercial.
Yeah.
I hate this kid. I hate him so much.
Oh, he's the worst.
He sucks.
I love Lynn's accent, because they're, like, in Philly, but she has kind of, like, a New York accent going.
Mm-hmm.
She kind of has like a whole Guidette type of vibe. I love her. Just from the way she dresses and her nails and her, she's, mwah. So Cole wakes up that night to use the restroom in the middle of the night. So he runs to pee and the temperature drops. And we can see Cole's breath. And there's that great jump scare of when the ghost walks in front of the door frame. And
Who among us hasn't run to the bathroom like that in the dark in the house, by the way? Mm-hmm, I know you have.
Everyone has.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how this kid lives in his own house.
I know.
Like, how does he live in his own house?
Excuse me. It's an interesting thing, too, because this movie presents the notion that hauntings aren't just where things happened. But the idea of someone that has this ability, ghosts seek them out.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Which is even scarier thought. Because it'd be one thing if he just, like, happened upon ghosts because he happened on places that were haunted. But these motherfuckers are coming to his house. They didn't necessarily die there. They're just there because of him. Because they're seeking him out specifically. Ugh.
Which is why I said he needs Jennifer Love Hewitt. Because that shit happened to her in Ghost Whisperer all the time. I gotta Google it. Was Ghost Whisperer heavily influenced by The Sixth Sense?
Oh, probably. I don't even remember what years the Ghost Whisperer was on.
I don't know either. Mm. It has to be. It's the same story.
Yeah, I mean, essentially. Funnily enough, I was going to talk about this later, but M. Night Shyamalan said that this movie was actually inspired by an episode of Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Yeah. I'm here. What episode?
I have it somewhere in my notes. I don't remember where, but like, I don't remember it. But yeah, M. Night Shyamalan is really good at stealing shit too. So that's not surprising. I have a love-hate relationship with him, Mitchell. Like, I like a lot of his movies, but he's very problematic.
What a twist.
What a twist. I love that on Robot Chicken they gave him an accent as if he's like from India. He's from Philly. Some racist bullshit. And I know it's racist and awful, but who hasn't called him M. Night Shyamalama Ding Dong at least once?
Yeah, Seth called him out the other day.
It just rolls off the tongue. It can't be helped. Anyway, there's a fucking ghost in Cole's kitchen. This, like, battered woman. And she screams at Cole, frightening him, and he hides in his blanket fort in his room that it is full of religious figurines. So that's why he stole.
Stole
one from the church.
And the soldiers to protect him.
Yeah.
My heart goes out for my child.
Poor baby.
That it hurts my feelings.
So Cole's class puts on a play with Tommy as the lead. And Malcolm watches from the audience. And after the play, Cole and Malcolm walk down the school halls talking. And this is where he's like, Tommy Tomasino says the play sucked. What do you say? Can't remember exactly how he worded it, but it was like sucked big time or blew big time or something like that.
Yeah.
But as they walk down the hall, Cole stops because he can see the ghosts of three colonial people hanging from nooses.
Yeah, horrifying.
Yeah. I wonder how often he sees them. Are they there all the time? Are they just there sometimes? I don't know.
Yeah.
And he explains to Malcolm, he's like, you know, the prickles on the back of your neck or the hairs on your arm standing up? That's them. They get mad and it gets cold. Ugh.
Oh, the they get mad part made me so upset.
Mm-hmm. Because that's what's frightening. Like, the idea of a ghost doesn't scare me inherently. An angry ghost?
One that can hurt you, like, has hurt him specifically?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, no thanks. Hard pass.
No thanks. Yeah. Oh. And he asks Malcolm, he says, please make them leave. And Malcolm says, I'm working on it. Oh, so sad. And then there's that cute little scene of Lynn pushing Cole in a grocery cart.
Oh, yeah, that was so sweet. I was like, oh. And he just looks so relieved.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Oh, she pushes him through this through the parking lot and starts running, and he puts his arms out like he's flying, and it's just
really cute. It's especially upsetting because he's just enjoying being with his mom. Like, he doesn't want to tell her what's wrong and what's happening. And it was just a time for them to be normal together. Oh, yeah. My feelings are hurt.
Then we see Tommy's cough syrup commercial. It's playing on TV, and Cole throws something at the TV screen.
Which I'm feeling.
Yeah, I would too.
Oh my god! If my middle school bully had a commercial, I would probably burn down the goddamn house.
It's true. I kind of have a feeling that's not the first time he's done it either, because Lynn's just like, Cole, like, she's not even that phased that he just chucked something at the TV. The thermostat is broken, quote unquote broken, because it's very cold in their house. And it's probably because it's chock full of ghosts. So they sit down for dinner, and Lynn tells Cole that she found her dead mom's bumblebee pendant in his room. And she's, you know, upset because she doesn't want anything to happen to it, and she doesn't like it when Cole takes it. And apparently this isn't the first time it's happened. And so she wants Cole to admit that he took it, but he doesn't admit it because he didn't take it. She's like, oh, so you just climbed out of my bedside table drawer and snuck into your room. And if I was Cole, if you were Cole, would you just be like, yeah, I took it? Or would you be like, I didn't?
I feel like he normally would have said that he took it, but he's so overwhelmed and he's tired of lying that he physically couldn't lie about that because it was just something so small that, like, he's already lying about a big thing that he doesn't want to lie about small things anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it is, because I think normally he probably would have done that, but, like, it was just a small thing, and he was like, I'm not lying about that, I'm tired of lying. Because he seems like a kid that would not like to do that.
Yeah.
Because he has too much anxiety to want to keep lying.
Yeah. Lynn gets mad when Cole says that he didn't take it, so she dismisses him from the table. And we see a ghost of a young man with the back of his head blown off in Cole's, going into Cole's bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
I said, come on, I'll show you where my dad keeps his gun. Ugh. Blah.
I know that. Bums me out.
It's upsetting. And Lynn is like trying to coax. Their little puppy is all freaked out and hiding in the closet again, because dogs know shit and the house is full of ghosts. And Lynn is trying to coax him to come out of the closet. And Cole comes in and he's like, Mom, if you're not very mad at me, can I sleep in your room tonight? And Lynn has this thing that she always does with Cole where she's like, look at my face. Mm-hmm. And she's like, look at my face. I'm not very mad. And so they hug. And Lynn asks why Cole is shaking. She's so confused. She doesn't know what's wrong and he can't tell her. So she's just so overwhelmed. They're both crying. The role of Lynn could have been so frustrating and so dismissible if it had been played by anybody else. But like, Tony's performance is so good.
Yeah.
Everyone in this movie is so good. Oh, she's so good. So the next day we see Anna at her work. She works in like a antique store, and she's trying to sell an antique ring, this really expensive sapphire ring, to this young couple. There's like a funny little exchange. It's one of those M. Night Shyamalan trying to shoehorn in some comedy moments.
Mm-hmm.
But then we see her give a birthday gift to her male coworker. Is the guy from before that showed up at her house.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the first edition of some book or whatever.
Yeah. And
they hug and end up kissing. And Malcolm sees it happen from the front door of the store, and he breaks the glass in the window before storming off. So Malcolm tells Cole he can't be his doctor anymore. I guess the thing with Anna was probably the last straw. He probably felt like he was working too much and he wants to work things out with Anna. So he's probably really overwhelmed with Cole. So he's basically quitting.
Mm-hmm.
And Cole begs him to help. And, you know, tries to convince him that what's happening to him is real. And he's like, you know, some magic is real. And it works. I mean, he convinces him to keep trying to help. So Malcolm's back in his basement office and he's listening back to an old session tape with Vincent. And there's a moment in the tape when Malcolm left the room and left Vincent alone. And when he comes back into the room, Vincent's crying. Well, he rewinds the tape and he turns the volume all the way up. And in the room that was supposedly empty except for Vincent, he can hear another man's voice. It's a man in Spanish. What is he saying? I forget what he's saying. I think he talks about it in the next scene. But he's saying something like, God help me, or something creepy. But once he hears that ghost's voice, he realizes that Cole and Vincent are the same. And that Cole is telling the truth. And that he failed Vincent because he didn't realize that Vincent was going through the same thing that Cole was.
He says, please, I don't want to die. Lord, save me, save me.
Ugh. Creepy. Imagine hearing that on one of those old tapes and coming from an empty room. God, no. No, that'd be creepy as fuck.
Yeah.
So, Malcolm meets with Cole in the church again and suggests the way to make the ghosts go away is just to listen to them and to help them. Which,
ghost whisperer.
Though that turns out to be true, that's like a big ask.
Especially for a small child.
For a kid. Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn.
But like, yeah.
Yeah. So Malcolm comes home that night just as that male co-worker of Anna's is driving away from his place. And then that night we see Cole is sleeping in his fort when he hears Lynn talking in her sleep. She's having a nightmare about Cole being hurt. And he kind of soothes her in her sleep a little bit. And then he goes to go back into his fort. And there's a ghost like chases him into the fort. And it's a little girl vomiting. And he runs away frightened. But then he remembers Malcolm's advice to try and help. So he goes back to his room to speak to her. And he like pulls the blankets from his fort off of her. And she's sitting there. And she's like, I feel much better now. And he's like, do you want to tell me something? And then presumably they have a conversation, but it cuts to the next scene.
Mm-hmm.
And Cole and Malcolm take a bus to the ghost girl's funeral.
Which is like forever away. Like she traveled a ways to go see him.
Yeah.
Which is like, that means he's a beacon. And it's just upsetting. It's sad. I'm sad about it.
Yeah. They take this long bus ride and the house is filled with people and he goes upstairs to the little girl's room and the ghost of the girl is under the bed and startles him. But she gives Cole a box that has a videotape inside and Cole gives it to the girl's father. And so he puts the tape in and the tape shows like she had been playing with little marionettes and had been filming it, and the camera kept rolling after her stepmom came into the room, and we see that the little girl's stepmother was poisoning her. A Munchausen.
How do we know it's her stepmom? How do we know it's a stepmom? I thought it was the mom. I missed that.
I don't know why I always thought it was the stepmom. I just assumed.
Oh, I thought it was the regular. I just thought it was her mom.
Maybe it was. I don't know where I got that from. Maybe it was just the mom. I don't know. The matriarch. Let's see. Oh, yeah. I guess it is just her mother. Whatever. I just, like, assumed that it was an evil stepmother situation. But it's like a Munchausen's by proxy type scenario. She's been poisoning her with, like, putting cleaner in her soup to keep her sick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like, I'm glad that we had that tape as evidence to show this, but you know what would have been a big red flag? The fact that she wore a red dress to her kid's funeral.
Yeah.
If you wear a bright red dress to someone's funeral, you are unhinged.
Is it me? Am I the drama?
That's I don't think I'm the drama.
I don't think it's me. Okay, but honestly, though, like, imagine, like, this creepy little kid came to your house during your kid's funeral and, like, handed you that. Imagine.
You'd be so upset with your spouse that you probably would have forgotten about the kid.
I mean, props to the little girl ghost for solving her own murder. Good job, yeah. Misha Barton.
Yeah, it is Misha Barton.
Yeah.
Maybe Misha Barton.
Yes, she went on to go to the ghost world to go to the OC.
Welcome to the OC, bitch. There's an Orange County, North Carolina, that I just learned about. And every time I have to write a document about Orange County, I always laugh. So now that the truth is revealed, the girl's spirit will now be at rest, presumably. So now that Cole has kind of like solved his problem by realizing he has to help the ghosts, his life overall gets better. And he gets cast in the lead in the next school play. They're doing like a Sword in the Stone thing, and he gets cast as Arthur. And he's getting ready, and a ghost of a woman with severe burns is helping him get ready. And Mr. Cunningham, Stuttering Stanley, comes to fetch him. And you can tell that they've like made up, but it's very tenuous. That they're he's like very unnerved whenever he's around.
Yeah.
But he's making conversation. He's like, "Do you know that when I was in school, this whole part of the building caught on fire?" And he's like, "Yeah, I know. It's just talking to a burn bitch." But we see the play. It's very cute. And at the end, mirroring his fantasy from earlier in the movie, all the characters pick him up on their shoulders. And they all collapse in a big pile together. It's very cute.
It is very cute.
And Tommy Tomasino is cast as the town idiot. So even he gets his comeuppance.
Deserved.
Totally. So after the play, Malcolm and Cole are talking. And now that Malcolm has helped Cole, they're saying their farewells, but not before Cole tries to help Malcolm. And yeah. he suggests that to talk to his wife, to talk to her while she's asleep. She'll listen without even realizing. And they don't want to say goodbye, so they just say, "See you tomorrow," even though they won't see each other again. So Cole and Lynn are in a traffic jam. There's an accident stopping traffic. And while they're stuck in the car together, Cole decides that now is when he's going to admit to his mom the truth. So he's
ready to communicate.
Yeah, that's the way he puts it, which is so funny. Ready to communicate with you now. he says, you know, the accident up there, someone did get hurt. A lady died. And she's like, "Oh my God, can you see her?" And he's like, "Yes, she's standing outside my window." And sure enough, there's a bloody ghost outside of the car window that she can't see, obviously, but Cole can. And he explains to her that he can see ghosts. And, you know, obviously she doesn't believe him at first. And she's trying to interrupt him. And he's like, "I talk to grandma sometimes." And she's like, "That's very wrong. Don't joke about that." And he, to convince her, he tells her things that there's no way that he would know otherwise. Yeah. He said, she said that she saw you dance. She said that when you were little, you had a big fight and you didn't think she came to your dance rehearsal, but she did. And she said that you look like an angel. And grandma's the one that takes the bumblebee pendant out of her room. And Lynn's just crying, you know, she's doing such a good performance. And she said that Cole says that grandma says that you came to the place where she was buried and asked her a question. And she said the answer was every day. "What question do you ask, mama?" And she said, "Do I make her proud?" I was crying like a bitch this whole scene.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I'm kind of emo, like, just thinking about it, just because it's so, like, thank God for Ghost Grandma. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, it helps. Like, that was so helpful for her to believe him.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's really important.
Yeah. And again, it's easy for me to say this because I believe in this stuff and not everyone does, but like, after hearing all that, everything should just click into place. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like his anxieties, his injuries, the pictures, all the weird stuff that happens in the house. Like, it would not take much to convince me.
No, not at all.
For all the shit that she's seen, you know?
Yeah.
So we're to our final scene. So Malcolm comes home and Anna is asleep on the couch. She fell asleep watching their wedding video again. And she's talking in her sleep and she says, "I miss you. Why, Malcolm? Why did you leave me?" And he's like, "I didn't leave you. I'm right here." And then she drops his wedding band.
Mm-hmm.
And he realizes that he hasn't been wearing his wedding band. And funnily enough, Bruce Willis is left-handed, but he learned how to write with his right hand so that there wouldn't be any like steady shots revealing his left hand in the movie, showing that he didn't have his wedding ring on.
Bro.
Right. Dedication.
For a contractual obligation movie?
Knocked it out of the park.
Out of the park. You're going to do that for a movie you don't even want to be in, but did eventually become like one of the most iconic roles that you've been in. What?
I think he must have really clicked with M. Night because he ended up doing the Unbreakable movies with him too. I think he really just. So now the truth is revealed that through this whole movie, he's been dead and he's been a ghost. And suddenly all these different things sink into place. Like, you see him in rooms with other adults, but he's never shown talking to any of them. We've only ever seen him talk to Cole. He is always wearing some variation of the outfits that he wore the night he died.
Yep.
Even the times where we saw him talking to his wife, they were in a crowded restaurant, and it's scenes where she looked right at him. She could have been looking at anything else, and like, it all makes sense. As soon as you know, you're just like, oh, duh. Now, all that being said, how did he die that fucking fast? It cuts back to that night and we see him die. It's like he got shot in the side and he died super fast. Do you think it's weird?
I mean, yeah, it's a little weird.
Yeah. Also,
yes.
You know what else is weird? If you were Anna, would you stay in that fucking house?
No.
Absolutely the fuck not. I would not live alone in the house that my husband was murdered in and some crazy man shot himself in the head in my bathroom. Fuck no.
Yeah, no.
Even if I didn't believe in ghosts, I still would not do it. No, fuck no.
Yeah, no, I don't think I would be able to.
So the movie was rented by 80 million people in 2000, making it the year's top rated VHS and DVD title. 80 million people. That's crazy. The film was nominated for 6 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, Best Director, Best Original Screenplay, Best Supporting Actor for Haley Joel Osment, and Best Supporting Actress for Toni Collette. Surprisingly, this is Toni Collette's only Oscar nomination, which
really
is it. Yeah, isn't that the craziest thing you've ever heard in your life?
Yeah,
yeah. She should have won that one, and she should have been nominated since then. But whatever. I still think she should have been nominated for Hereditary.
Oh hell yeah.
But yeah. That's all I have on Sixth Sense. So do you have any final thoughts?
I can't believe it didn't win an Academy Award.
I know. It was nominated for so many and did not win a single one.
What was I going to say? Because I thought there was one thing I was going to say. I guess not. Yeah, like, so this is, I can't believe I've never seen it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I can't believe I've never seen this movie.
I know. I don't know how you made it this far in life
I know.
without seeing it. Was it just one of those things if it got spoiled for you, so you just never bothered?
No, I feel like it was 1999 and I just didn't watch that kind of stuff.
Oh, that makes sense.
I was a weird kid. Like, as you know, I missed out on a lot of like 90s TV because I was too busy watching Nick at Night. So, literally any 90s show, I didn't watch it because I was watching Nick at Night. So I feel like it was probably just one of those kind of things where I wasn't like watching films yet. And
Yeah.
it probably would have scared me. I don't know if you know this, but I am a huge scaredy cat.
I was actually wondering when I asked you to watch this, I was like, I wonder if it'll scare her.
No, not this one. I mean, like, I don't know, like I like movies like, you know me, I like ghost movies, but not this one didn't scare me very much. It was there weren't enough ghosts. You know
Yeah.
what I mean? Like they weren't didn't have a lot of screen time. That wasn't what it was about. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like it was, but it wasn't.
Right.
So it didn't, I mean, and also like to be fair, Bruce Willis was a pretty nice ghost. All things considered. I mean, he
Yeah.
did help, like, and it was like his atonement or whatever. And then he, you know, his mistake, his what do we call it? His unfinished business.
Yeah.
So I wonder if his the other Vincent guy is a ghost though.
Oh, I don't know.
Hi, Kitty. Sorry, my cat just came out and looked at me and he's like really cute, so
So I'm really glad that you watched it finally and that you liked it.
Oh yeah, I really liked it. Like it's good. My mom loves this movie, which I
And
think
this
is funny because if there's any movie that my mom has seen of movies that we've covered, like it's this one, and she's like, "I love that movie. It's so good." And then she like recited the plot back to me. I'm like, "Ma'am, what?" So.
I'm glad there's at least one episode of this show that your mom would be on board
Yeah.
for.
Yeah.
Well, that about wraps it up. So if you look in the episode description, you will find our link tree that will link to our social media pages. You will also find our support page where you can help support the pod with a one-time donation, or you can sign up for a monthly patronage. Please share the show with your friends and come back and see us in the next episode. Thank you again to Julie for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
And until next time, we are the Weirdos, Mister.